Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. The dramatically swift democratic reform in Myanmar has been the geopolitical surprise of the past year, more unexpected than the Arab Spring. The new government, headed by a former military leader, freed thousands of political prisoners and signed truces with rebel groups. Press restrictions and labor laws were loosened. Opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi emerged from house arrest, and this month, the Nobel Prize winner led her party to victory in parliamentary elections that were deemed, for the most part, free and fair. Here's an excerpt from Voice of America's coverage.
Aung San Suu Kyi's supporters celebrated at her National League for Democracy headquarters after the party announced she won. Lawyer Daw Nguyen Nhi Aung says she believes the woman known affectionately as the Lady will make life better in Burma when she enters parliament.
I believe she will do the best things for the people. She will fulfill the requirements of the people who have suffered so much.
Now, although the military is still firmly in control, international sanctions are being lifted. And this weekend, the United Nations Secretary General is visiting Myanmar for the first time in 20 years. Joining us on Global Journalist to talk about these developments are Lynn Than, Chief of the Burmese Service for Voice of America, and David Stout, an editor with the Democratic Voice of Burma, who's based in Thailand. Welcome to Global Journalist.
Hello, Dave.
Hi.
Thank you.
So before we get into questions, let's put this in perspective. It wasn't so long ago that Burma was described as the rice bowl of Asia. But for nearly 50 years, since the 1960s, the resource-rich country tucked between India, China, and Thailand was isolated from the outside world. The regime that took control changed the country's name to Myanmar from Burma, and the military's repressive tactics drew international sanctions that left the country desperately poor. Now, when you recently returned to Burma for a visit after fleeing the country 23 years ago, could you please share with us how Burma changed while you lived there and what compelled you to join the an anti-government uprise?
Yeah, so I went back to Burma last year in November, first time in 23 years. So I left Burma in 1988, which was at the time to an uprise for the change of the regime at the time. And we talked with student-led demonstrations toppled the socialist regime over there, but we found only that the country was taken over by the military. So as a result, all the students, including me, have to flee the country. It was in 1988.
And how did you get out?
Yeah, I walked on the way to Thailand through the jungles for about 2 or 3 days. And then after that, I arrived in the Thailand-Burma border, staying at the student, what I call camps, what we call ourselves as a kind of all Burma Student Democratic Front, a kind of a student's group. And after that, 2 years after that, I immigrated to England and started working for the BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation.
Right.
Then I became a journalist and then ended up my career as a journalist in Voice of America in Washington. But suddenly, that throughout my career as a journalist, since early 90s, I have a lot of occasions because I covered Southeast Asia. Especially, I was sent to Thailand and to stay at the BBC Bangkok Bureau. But at that time, I always tried to go back to Burma, applying visa.
Yes.
But Burmese government always rejected my visa applications because I was a kind of a personal non grata.
Right.
And also, Burmese government always think that organization like BBC or Voice of America as a kind of subversive organization. So they when I had a chance last year to go back to Burma, it was quite thrilling for me.
Yeah, tell us about that. Now, were you surprised that you were invited back in?
Oh, yes. Roughly about August in last year, Burmese government newspapers are carrying the advertisement or whatever the promos in a newspaper saying that the BBC is liar, VOA is the enemy of the country or something like that. But suddenly, in November, they allowed one of my journalists, VOA journalists, to go into Burma to cover the first visit of the U.S. Policy coordinator to Burma. So, and after that, they extended an invitation to me as a chief of the Burmese service of VOA to talk to Ministry of Information over there for a possible future cooperations with that VOA and their Ministry of Information.
And what was it like for you personally to come back and see these enormous changes that had taken place?
Yeah, physically it is really unrecognizable because I left 20 years ago. So the landscape is completely changed. You know, I was quite so surprised and then quite thrilled to see all those things. Like when we were there 23 years ago, we really have a kind of the tallest building. It was a 6-story building in the downtown Rangoon. And later on, there's a lot of makeshift long stories building. And then the population in Rangoon is completely crammed with a lot of people over there. But I was also quite disappointed because
right.
Why then, a long time ago, Rangoon was quiet and for me it's kind of a pleasant. But now it's very crowded and crammed. So I even think that mainly because of that, over the past 10 decades, a lot of new buildings are put without a proper regulations, probably. So it's a bit unpleasant to see that all those dirty buildings over there.
Yeah.
But now, and on my second time in the beginning of this year, it was a little bit changed because it was in a drive of changing the capital into the more pleasant place or something like that.
Okay.
A little bit tidier.
Okay. And David, how did you become interested in Myanmar, and when were you last inside the country?
I first became interested in the country actually when I was still a student at University of Texas. I was working on a documentary in northern Thailand about immigration issues with stateless citizens, and most of the people we were covering were from Burma. And it was the first time I'd learned a lot about the country, and I ended up coming back to the region a couple of years later and was able to travel in Burma in 2009. I spent a few weeks there pretty much just going to some of the major tourist sites and spent some time in Shan State as well, and that made quite an impact. I ended up staying in Southeast Asia for the last 2 years working as a journalist and had always kind of kept my eye on Burma and been watching the developments, and as soon as I was able to find a job covering the country, I went for it.
Okay. And now, before we talk about the political standoff that developed this week and some other potential pitfalls, I'd like to get your reactions to the comments made by the UN Secretary General's special advisor on Burma, what he said yesterday. He said that this desperately poor nation has the potential to become an Asian tiger if it promotes investment, eases financial restrictions, and finds experts to develop the country. Now, Lewin, there are some big ifs in that assessment, but do you think that Burma has a strong potential?
Yes, so when you talk about the potentials about Burma in the future, there's no doubt about that, because we proudly say that Burma was a kind of rice bowl of the Southeast Asia or the war in the 1960s, but only because of the mismanagement of the economies and then governance and poor governance. The country became the poor of the poorest country in the world. Anyway, there's no doubt about that. What happened, we saw it. But again, that talking about the potentiality, and then as the situations, we need to be a little bit of careful now. But the Burma is under the kind of a military dictators for decades and decades. And after that, all the dictators enrich themselves. And then all the cronies are controlling everything inside in the country. So when the outside world rush and into Burma and do business with those cronies, and then we have to think about who will benefit from that. Do we actually see the kind of trigger-down effect to the people soon or later? We don't know. So the word is caution. That's all.
Right. Speaking of caution, let's talk about the first public confrontation between the government and the newly elected lawmakers, Suu Kyi and the 42 other members of the National League for Democracy boycotted the parliament's opening session on Monday. David, how significant is this dispute regarding this constitutional oath of office?
I mean, it'll only be as significant as long as it lasts. A lot of people are surprised by it. I think a lot of people are somewhat upset by it as well. Certainly, from what I understand, there's a clause that if they miss 15 days of parliament, then potentially they could lose their seat. So it's an impasse. I think everybody's hopeful that it, this will make it through and figure some way out to get into the parliament with the wording. But it's, there's some concern among analysts and experts in the region that, there's going to be a lot of political battles ahead for the NLD. And some people are surprised that this is going to be, the first one. And there's some concern, if they're spending too much political capital already on an issue that maybe perhaps isn't as relevant as maybe addressing some of the other laws or, health care, other aspects that people see perhaps more pertinent.
Lewin, do you agree that Suu Kyi picked the wrong fight here?
Yes, for me, it is the kind of that she's early to pick that kind of fight. Because of her main intentions, of course, already declared that or announced that her desire is to change some part of those, some elements in the 2008 constitution, which allowed the dominance of military in the Burma politics and then a lot of any other things. So main thing is she has to be in the parliament to what I call start the or initiate that dialogue and then to persuade the parliamentarians to agree into that her proposed change. But before she goes into there, and there's some sort of argument over the wording of the taking oath, and I don't understand much, but I feel that it's too early to pick that kind of fight.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about how this happened and motivations. There's been a lot of speculation about what caused this surprise. David, in your opinion, what contributed to this Democratic shift?
I think it's caught quite a few people off surprise. Certainly, it sounds like the leadership shift that happened a few years ago with this new government. There's some legitimacy to the fact that maybe some of the old guard is out, and some of the new personalities have been able to kind of push their agenda forward. But I think largely from what I've seen and read that economic stagnation, poverty, over-reliance on China, these have all kind of, combined into the inertia that's kind of put Burma into the situation it is now.
And Lewin, what is your thoughts on what brought this about?
Yeah, to me that Burmese military is know very well how to play time and space. And they control the time and they control the space for a long time. And after that, they plan quite well in that sense. And to be honest, like last election, 2010 elections, they cheat the whole country and the whole community. But in the end, they get what they want. But after all, they got their constitutions, their own constitution. They got a parliament with their own people. They can control But what they need later on is legitimacy. And then to get a kind of recognition from an outside world, because they really know later on they know that they cannot survive without that kind of legitimacy and recognition. So they have to what I call prove that they are willing to accept all inclusiveness in their political what I call play in the Burma politics, and so they open it up anyway.
Right.
Knowing that there will be at least initially in a, for the next 2 years, Aung San Suu Kyi party where, of course, if they can control maximum of, like, for example, now it's only 43 seats out of both house in that sense, you know, altogether 1,300 seats. So out of 1,300 seats, you know, that are combinations of all upper and lower house and all those what are called divisions in parliament. So Aung San Suu Kyi party, NLD, control only 43 seats. You know, what can they do much? They know that. They calculate it. It is a kind of a calculated, what are called, celebrated.
Is it somewhat of a, so basically you're saying it's somewhat of a ruse that these elections are just a cover so they can maybe get the sanctions lifted and have more, as you say, legitimacy.
Yeah, it is a kind of a, in any circumstance, a win-win situation for them.
David, I want to see if your thoughts on that on argument. Also,
yeah,
how
I mean,
China – let's talk – and also after that, let's talk about China's involvement in this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what's been said. I think the government is desperate for, you know, legitimacy. They're also desperate to rebrand their image as well. I think a lot of bringing Aung San Suu Kyi and NLD into the fold has been, you know, aimed at dropping sanctions. Now, the real test will be in the next few years, especially with the general elections in 2015, to see if the military-backed party will really cede power if there was another general election that were to sweep the NLD in majorly. But that's a big what-if right now. But at the moment, I think, yeah, they're desperate for some type of new image to be brought back into the international fold. And a lot of that, I think, that has to do with, you know, bringing in new investments and not having to rely so much on China. I don't think that means that Burma wants to abandon China. I think they just want to diversify their investments and feel like they have a little more agency as far as with controlling their own kind of destiny. Whereas if you depend too much on China, too much on China's money, perhaps that agency would be more limited.
Lewin, what are your thoughts on the China angle in this?
Yeah, before I go into that, I'd like to add one thing that talking about that kind of military real intentions about the bringing change into Burma, I don't want to discount people in the military that some reform-minded people. Like current President Thein Sein, you know, people see him as a kind of a really reform-minded person. And I also tend to believe in that in the way, because seemed to me that whatever he did is a kind of a, in the directions of or bringing the country into that democratic reforms. We know that there's some elements in the military and in our current government who really like to see that countries in the change. But there's a lot of diehard people stay in there, and there's a lot of interest to protect their wealth or powers for the near future. So the country is in a kind of play in the balance between these diehard people and then the reform-minded generals and also, you know, opposition force. So, but when it comes to the China issue, of course, I feel that not only people of Burma, even in the military itself, people are quite worried about influence of China. Not all those. It is there's a kind of a misunderstanding that Burmese military and generals are what I call obeying or listening to every word dictated from China. It is not true, as far as I know. They are also a little bit of worry, and they don't want to be called lackeys of China. So. Although, but they know that for the moment, because of the pressure from West, they have to depend some sort of China for kind of protections and then political arenas and then play to the regional politics or something like that.
Right.
So now Burmese government know that how to play between China and the West.
Yeah. But now, before I want to also talk about sanctions next, but before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalists.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at GJJournalist. Now, David, did the sanctions play a significant motivating role in this these changes? And what are the impacts of these sanctions being lifted?
I mean, I think absolutely. I think within the government that you have now, I think there's a lot of reform-minded people. And I think one of the biggest aims for opening up was probably to get sanctions dropped. Recently, you know, Australia, the EU announced they're suspending sanctions. Canada's dropping sanctions. The U.S. is going to start removing some of their sanctions. And I think once that happens, it's going to be a pretty hard tide to reverse. At the moment, there's so many business people and investors in Burma. It's kind of seen as Asia's last economic frontier in a lot of respects. It's rich in resource, somewhat untouched is the way they kind of talk about it. But I think it's also going to be a very difficult country to navigate economically as well. Because it is so untouched, the lack of infrastructure is a reality that a lot of businesses have to deal with. Okay. I think the real question and the real issue is going to be to make sure that Burma doesn't end up like Cambodia, where you have a lot of money that comes in, it only helps out a very small number of society, and then everybody else is kind of left behind. And that's where the new government really has a lot of responsibility in making sure it's done in a way that benefits all Burmese.
And, Lewin, what are your thoughts on the impact of the sanctions being lifted?
Yeah, certainly for a long run, Burma need sanctions lifted. But as I said it before, and then, for the moment, and the countries, all the business and economy is controlled by the cronies and the generals. So The only cautions all those Western countries need to be care about is that how do they deal with that cronies? So where they put everything in the hand of the cronies and the generals, and how will they approach to reform Burma economy at all? So that's a big question for the moment. That's why most of those Western countries like Britain, they are very cautious. They are not talking about completely lifting the sanctions, but instead they are just what I call proposing or doing what they are doing right now is suspending that sanctions. So they're just holding the kind of a stick in their hand. If there's something wrong or there's some sort of a reverse direction, they talk about it, that the sanctions will be reimposed again. That kind of things they are talking about.
Okay. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the media in Myanmar or Burma. David, I know that your organization, your reporters used to all work undercover, but that's not the case anymore. Can you tell us about how this has affected the coverage you're doing there and how it's changed?
Yeah, I mean, from what has happened in the last 7 to 8 months, it's been pretty remarkable. Before Democratic Voice of Burma, we relied particularly on a network of undercover journalists within Burma. To a certain degree, that's still the case. A lot of our journalists were released from prison in January who had been jailed after filming material from the 2007 uprising, Cyclone Nargis, things of those events. But to be honest, still, while there are changes, the journalists we have in Burma still aren't able to really operate legally. So there's still a lot of caution amongst our people within Burma. But yeah, things have changed. Our editors have been invited back. At the moment, we have credited journalists who have been given visas that are operating, that are working in the parliament now, filming. So yeah, there's more agency, there's more openness, but to a certain degree, there's no guarantees either. There's no rule of law in Burma. So things of like slander, publishing, there's a lot of things that need to be worked out for the media to feel truly protected. So while people maybe aren't being persecuted as vigorously as they were in the past, there's no real protections to say that won't happen again.
And Lewin, we have about another 90 seconds or so. What are your thoughts on media freedoms? I know there have been some changes, but do you think this is going to take a long time, or do you think this will be fairly swift to have more free expression?
I don't think it will be swift, because, of course, we are seeing that kind of a changing media landscape over there, because of that information ministry, which used to control everything in Burma, is now start talking about what I call free journalist organizations, talking about media law or so many other things. But mind you that in Burma, there's no daily newspaper apart from that government-controlled paper. And kind of private-owned journals, weekly journals, which are, for example, like maybe about 30 or 40 of them every week. But they are required still that to, what I call, especially for the political news or other things, they have to submit the articles or the news they want to publish before that in the censorship board.
Right.
They have to get approval first.
Okay,
so that kind of a control is still exists over
okay.
there.
Well, and now it's been fascinating, but we've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us today was Lewin Than of VOA's Burmese service and David Stout, an editor with the Democratic Voice of Burma, who's based in Thailand. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers, Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer, Donovan Ferguson was our lead producer. Now stay with us for a Free Press Watch, and join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now, Free Press Watch, a segment on Global Journalist where each week we bring you a rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world. I'm Lainey Mullen. Today's news comes from the Committee to Protect Journalists, DAWN, the International Press Institute, and Reporters Without Borders. State forces in Syria continue to kill locals brave enough to report on the troubles in Homs and Damascus in spite of a ceasefire. A citizen photojournalist was executed after being held for questioning last week, and at least three other citizen journalists were killed in the past 2 weeks. A well-known journalist in Karachi, Pakistan, was found dead last week. Murtaza Razvi, a senior editor at DAWN, appeared to have been strangled and tortured, though police have not yet determined the motive. Jordanian journalists were arrested this week on anti-state charges about a story written about supposed misconduct in the royal court. Sahar al-Mutaseb was released on bail, but her brother Jamal al-Mutaseb is being held in prison. At least 50 journalists have protested the trial, which will occur in a military court. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalist. I'm Lainey Mullen. See you next week.